Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, The Residents of Jambudweep Offer Prayers, Text Number 20. Savai Pati Syat Akuto Baya Swayam. Samantata Pan Bhavayaturam Janam Pati. Sa ekas eve tarata mito bayam. Naivatma labhad adi manyate param. Sa vaipati syat akuto bhaya swayam. Samantata pati bhayaturam janam. Sa eka eva tarata mito bhayam. Naivatma labhad adi manyate param. Yadakato baya swayam. Samantata pati baya turam janam. Seka eva turata mito bayam. Naivatma labhad adi manyate param. Matiji. Savaipati syat akato baya swayam. Samantata pati baya turam janam. Sa eka eva tarata mito bayam. Naivatma labhad adi manyate param. Sahi vai indeed pati a husband syat would be akato baya who is not fearful of anyone swayam self-sufficient samantata entirely pati maintains vaya aturam who is very afraid janam a person saha therefore he eka one eva only Itarata, otherwise, mita, from one another, bhayam, fear, na, not, eva, indeed, atmalabhat, then the attainment of you, adi, greater, manite, is accepted. Param, other thing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He alone, who is never afraid, but who, on the contrary, gives complete shelter to all fearful persons, can actually become a husband and protector. Therefore, my Lord, you are the only husband, and no one else can claim this position. If you were not the only husband, you would be afraid of others. Therefore, persons learned in all Vedic literature accept only your Lordship as everyone's master, and they think no one else a better husband and protector than you. Purport. Here the meaning of husband or guardian is clearly explained. People want to become a husband, a guardian, a governor, or a political leader without knowing the actual meaning of such a superior position. There are many people all over the world, indeed, throughout the universe, who claim for some time that they are husbands, political leaders, or guardians. But in due course of time, the Supreme Lord desires their removal from their posts, and their careers are immediately finished. Therefore, those who are actually learned and advanced in spiritual life do not accept any leader, husband, or maintainer other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna personally states in Bhagavad Gita 18:66, Aham tvam sarva-papevyo mokshisyami. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Krishna is not afraid of anyone. On the contrary, everyone is afraid of Krishna. Therefore, he can actually give protection to a subordinate living entity. Since so-called leaders or dictators are completely under the control of material nature, they can never give complete protection to others, although they claim this ability due to false prestige. People do not know that the real advancement in life consists of accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one's master. Instead of deceiving themselves and others by pretending to be all-powerful, all political leaders, husbands, and guardians should spread the Krishna consciousness movement so that everyone can learn how to surrender to Krishna, the Supreme Husband. So the text again. Savai pati syad akuto baya swayam samantatak pati baya turam janam sa eka eva tarata mito bayam naivatmalabhad adi manyate param. Translation. He alone who is never afraid, but who on the contrary gives complete shelter to all fearful persons, can actually become a husband and protector. Therefore, my Lord, you are the only husband, and no one else can claim this position. If you are not the only husband, you would be afraid of others. Therefore, persons learned in all Vedic literature accept only your lordship as everyone's master, and they think no one else a better husband and protector than you. Namo Vishnu Pudaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gorvani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Satarne Natasya Karyam Karnam Chavidite Natatamaschavi Kastrijishite Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate Svabhavaki Gyana Bhala Kriya Cha. Natasya Karyam Karnam Chavidite. No one is greater or equal to Krishna. That means everyone is less than him. That means we ourselves are less than Krishna. Of course, if we don't believe in Krishna, then it doesn't make any difference. Just like one of the offenses, chanting the holy name, is to put Lord Vishnu on the same level, or to put Brahma and Shiva on the same level as Vishnu. But generally it's not a very important offense, we think, for ourselves, because we don't believe in Brahma and Shiva. Therefore it's not very difficult consider that they're not on the same level as Vishnu, who we don't believe in either. So it's one of the offenses we think we don't bother committing. But actually we don't put Brahma and Shiva on the same level as Vishnu. Sometimes we put Michael Jackson on the same level as Vishnu, or Tiger Woods or something like that. Tiger Woods, you know who Tiger Woods is? He's a tiger who used to be in the woods. He's a famous golf player. What's that? I guess more famous here would be the Beatles. But yeah, we may not think the Beatles is supreme or whoever else, but we take them as our supreme, something that we think about, we cherish within our heart, we try and follow in their footsteps. In other ways, we take them as some kind of authority. And where do they lead? What is that? I can't remember. I want to hold your hand. That's where it leads to. So following them, we go far. We follow them all the way down the line, and we'll meet Yamaraj. The question is, if we follow someone, just like Andaya Tandira Upigiyamanas Tate Pisha Tantra Uru Dami Vada. Generally, the blind are leading the blind. So why are they blind? The Tevidu Swarthi Katim He Vishnu. They don't know that the aim of life is to reach Vishnu, Krishna. So why is the aim of life to reach Krishna? Because Krishna is the Bhagavan, the reservoir of all unlimited opulence. Anyone else we come in contact who's not leading us to Vishnu would just be wasting our time. We can only be satisfied when we actually become conscious of Krishna again. And we can only become conscious of Krishna if we act for Krishna. And we can only act for Krishna if we learn how to act for Krishna, someone who knows how to act for Krishna. Therefore it says, Gurur, as they repeated yesterday, Gurur nasasyat, Pita swajano nasasyat, Pita nasasyat, Janani nasasyat, Daivam nasasyan, Nachitat nacha patis janasyan, Namochi yaksum paiti mrityum. Took me around 20 years to learn that one. That one should not become a father. Well, the first one is guru. One should not become guru. In other words, guru means to not think I become guru. Guru means to think I become the servant of my guru. One cannot be guru unless he's in the mood of service to his guru. Otherwise, he's guru, which means cow. So actually, anyone who develops the feeling of servitorship to their guru in the succession, especially a guru who's completely surrendered to Krishna, 100%, one who becomes an instrument, Nimitra Matram Bhavasava Sachin, one who feels himself only to be an instrument of his guru, then one actually becomes guru. One actually becomes a representative of Krishna in this succession. The idea of becoming guru is not to collect a bunch of disciples, and whoever gets the most disciples, they win. At the end of life, they get a gold star. At the gates of Vaikuntha, one of the questions they don't ask you is, how many disciples did you have? And if you say, well, I only had 20,000, they say, sorry, go back and collect a few more and then we'll invite you to come in. The actual guru is probably explained in the Nectar Devotion series and lectures. He was saying that the actual guru realizes that only by the mercy of Krishna can we remember anything. That's one of our basic points of philosophy, that from Krishna comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Whatever we're remembering right now is not due to our wonderful qualities, our marvelous smile, our wonderful talents. It's due to the mercy of the Supersoul within our heart, reminding us of something or helping us forget something and giving us the intelligence to understand what we're forgetting and what we're remembering. For the nine devotee, Krishna helps them forget Krishna and gives them so much remembrance of all nonsense they can't at all remember Krishna. And anything you try to explain to them about Krishna, they can't understand. And for the devotee, he helps the devotee forget all the nonsense, remember himself, and understand who Krishna actually is. So that's coming from the mercy of the Supersoul. And for one who's in contact with the spiritual master in disciplic succession, then the Supersoul helps us remember what the spiritual master said, forget what everyone else said, and understand what the spiritual master said so we can apply it practically in our lives. Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Spiritual master means we're remembering the instructions coming into disciplic succession and applying them with enthusiasm and steadiness. Then, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, what kind of intelligence does Krishna give us? Intelligence so that we can become more steady, more enthusiastic about our devotional activities. So, for the nine devotees, they're thinking that they're the actual doers, they're the saviors, they're the proprietors, they're the enjoyers of this material world. And for the devotee, he knows that by the mercy of Krishna, I'm remembering the instructions of my spiritual master in disciplic succession. And when I repeat them to my disciples or followers, then when they follow them, when they understand them, when they forget about other activities, then I understand it's by the mercy of my spiritual master that that's occurring. And therefore, the guru, he takes his followers and disciples as representatives of his spiritual master, who's teaching him by their example how to better follow the instructions of his spiritual master. Therefore, he doesn't really think himself to be guru. He only thinks himself to be the servant of his spiritual master. So that's actually guru. Similarly, the husband, if the husband thinks he's the enjoyer of his wife and children, or the wife thinks she's the enjoyer of her wife and her husband and children, then they're not bona fide husbands or wives. Just like Priyavrata Maharaj. Priyavrata Maharaj was a student of Narada Muni, and he was sitting on Ganda Mandana Hill. And he was hearing instructions about renunciation. Now, if any of us get the fortune sometime to hear instructions about renunciation from Narada Muni himself, it's quite an interesting seminar. In any case, for a long time he was hearing these instructions, and he became fixed in those instructions of renunciation. He had no intention at all of getting married or ruling over any universe or anything like that. But Swayambhuva Manu, he had reached the age where he wanted to renounce his universe, which happened to be his kingdom. Now, I guess in different Manus, they have different authority, but this Swayambhuva Manu was actually ruling the universe, at least a good part of it. And so, Lord Brahma came with Swayambhuva Manu and Indra and different Mahajans. Lord Shiva came also to convince Priyavrata Maharaj to renounce his renunciation. Now, Narada Muni is also Mahajan, but when you have Lord Brahma there, you have Lord Shiva, you have a number of Mahajans there, Narada Muni had to surrender. And Priyavrata Maharaj had to surrender too, so he agreed to become the emperor of the universe. Now, emperors of the universe just don't sit around just eating maha all day long. Sounds like it would be nice to become the emperor of the universe, but they actually have responsibilities, and their main responsibility is to perform sacrifice. And in order to perform sacrifice, you need a wife. I'm not expert at sacrifice. I don't know why you need a wife. Does anyone know? The only thing I can understand from my little understanding. What's that?
If you're married, you need a wife.
But why if you're... I guess you have to be... In order to perform the sacrifice, or you don't actually perform the sacrifice, you organize the sacrifice, but the sacrifice is performed in order to satisfy Vishnu, generally for some kind of peace and tranquility and to get all the necessities of life for your citizens. Actually, generally speaking, the king is the biggest householder, and when you're the emperor of the universe, it means you're supposed to be the biggest householder of the universe, and everyone else is supposed to be your children. And generally, it's better if you have children if you have a wife too. Otherwise, it'd be rather one-sided, so to speak. So he had to get married. But he didn't really want to get married. He wasn't interested in sense gratification. But he got married anyhow. So how did he treat his wife? Generally speaking, the devotees think renunciation means that you just become detached, or even averse. Generally speaking, the brahmachari goes home for the first time after not seeing his mother. His mother's shocked that he's wearing some robes, saffron. She runs to the son and goes, you know, son. And he goes, stop! Don't touch me! You're a woman. She goes, I'm a what? You're a woman, don't touch me. What did they do to you? What happened to you? So this is rather not the best way of spreading Krishna consciousness to your family. I've learned the truth. Don't touch me. So this kind of renunciation is ultimately artificial. It's the brahmachari who every time he hears the name of a woman, he starts spitting. Yes. Yes. So, Priyavrata. Oh. So the brahmachari who says, I have nothing to do with women, that every time he thinks of a woman, he's usually the first one to get married. Or as Radha Nandamarg once said, when the brahmacharis were trying to get all the ladies to leave the temple in Brazil, he said, but that's not very practical. He said, if all the ladies leave the temple, then who will the brahmacharis dance for? But Priyavrata Maharaj was not that kind of renunciate. He got married and he dealt with his wife in a normal way. Otherwise, the whole universe would have gotten bewildered and, as they say in English, screwed up. Because whatever a great man does, everyone follows. If his wife came to embrace Prihvrata Maharaj, don't touch me, I'm just taking the part of a king, I don't want to have anything to do with you, get out of here. Then the whole universe would have become quite, you know, bewildered place to live in. So he acted as a perfect householder, and his wife also acted as a perfect wife. She dressed attractively to attract his attention. She glanced at him favorably, and he reciprocated accordingly. But within his heart, he always remained attached to Vishnu, to Krishna. He was always meditating upon Krishna, and whatever he did as a service to Krishna. Now that may seem inconceivable, because we think renunciation means no feelings. But if one is actually renounced in Krishna consciousness, the whole varieties of transcendental feelings are awakened, and therefore one can reciprocate perfectly with any living entity, because one acts as a perfect instrument for Krishna, who is a reservoir of all rasa and all feelings. So Prihvrata Maharaj acted as a perfect householder, and so did his wife. And the kingdom, the whole universe, went on very nicely. Although he always remained in a position of absolute renunciation, because he was always fully Krishna conscious. So Krishna consciousness is not to take something away, as the normal renunciates are, it's to add something, namely Krishna. And if one adds Krishna, then one will be perfectly protected under all circumstances. But without Krishna in the equation, one can actually not be a proper husband or a wife or anything else in this material world. Although one may imagine oneself to be the king or the husband or anything else, but actually one is simply bewildered by the illusory energy subjected to the laws of material nature. But if one takes shelter of Krishna, then one will find real protection and one will be able to give others protection too, because one is acting as an instrument for Krishna. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
So, when we visit our mothers and they want us to eat, what they cook, what should we, what is our proper conduct in that situation?
Well, it depends what they cook, of course. I imagine you're probably, your mother knows that you're a vegetarian. I don't know. What would you do, Mother Lakshmi Mani?
This comes up a lot, actually. I discuss this a lot in the disciples' course. That our first priority is to preach, and those of us, if you ever had the experience of being with Srila Prabhupada in visiting people's homes, sometimes even there's that story where, you know, someone noticed there were onions and something, and they went over to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada accepted the devotion. If there was devotion, he accepted that devotion first. So, of course, vegetarian is, you know, is a prerequisite. But if the parent is offering with an attempt to please a devotee, then that should be received with the sincerity of devotion should be received, because otherwise it causes a lot of trouble. And it could make you get to, you know, I mean, it resulted in deprogramming all kinds of crazy things because we were so insensitive to the way our family needed to be treated. I had a cartoon on the door of my office and it has a picture of a young man who's obviously a devotee, has a sikha, he's wearing a dhoti, and he's sitting on a bed, he has a suitcase packed, and his parents are standing in the door and they say, we just want you to know, if you want to go back to being a drug addict, we support you 100%. Because, you know, we just became so robot-like that we didn't show them bhakti. And bhakti is a soft, it's a soft heart science. So we have to do what's necessary to preach it. I always remember Prabhupada in the situation with Sally Agarwal. Sally Agarwal came to the Festival of Inspiration 2 years ago and spoke about her experience with Prabhupada. And she remembered him as being very soft, very tolerant, very compassionate. They had meat and they were, he was smoking, not in Prabhupada's presence, but it was there, you know, and it was in the fridge, and Prabhupada knew what they were doing. He didn't say anything to them. He didn't chastise them, he didn't try to change them, he didn't do anything. He encouraged them. He's encouraging them. And I think that's our responsibility. So whatever it takes to encourage our parents,
But it's always good to tell your parents. I mean, it depends on how receptive they are.
Yeah, they have to see how much devotion they have, how much affection they have. And affection for a devotee is a good thing. If you're a devotee and they have affection for you, it'll help them. And it'll grow in their heart.
Yes.
Krishna mercifully solved my problem in this regard. Whenever I go home, my mother tells me to teach her how to cook, so I cook, so no problem.
Yeah, so it depends on. In this.
She became vegan, so.
Good.
Prabhupada said if you don't have intelligence, talk to somebody who does.
All right, we go to some. I remember one time I went to some Indians. This is like 45 years ago or so. I was at some Indians' place, and they had this thing. And of course, they always want to feed you. But I wasn't really very enthusiastic to get fed at that time. So I asked Tomo Krishnamurti. He said, "You know, you don't have to eat because it's not like required. Sometimes they force you to eat." You don't get any Lakshmi from them, and you get is sick. Probably at least he got money from them. But he'd eat very little. He'd just honor a little bit. All the other devotees in Bombay, they were going like 3 or 4 places a day. Prabhupada was making life members, because that was the criteria, that if you wanted to become a life member, you had to, if you wanted to invite Prabhupada to eat at your house, you had to become a life member. So Prabhupada was, they were making life members, and he was going 3 or 4 houses a day. And then so many devotees came with him, and they had all these big feasts. The devotees were young and hungry, and they're, and they're eating 3 or 4 feasts a day, which in India is a, you know, good sign you're going to turn into renunciate very soon. You're going to have to fast for some time. So they all got sick. I mean, being sick in India at that time was the norm. You consider abnormal if you stayed healthy, which is, no one did. But Prabhupada, when he went to all these different places, he'd just take a little bit. He'd just actually honor it a little bit. And he wouldn't eat, you know, but he'd do his service there. Of course, sometimes Prabhupada would eat, like in that, when he was dealing with in Bombay, what was his name? Mr. Nair. Is that was actually his name, was Nair?
Yeah, that's Bombay guy?
Yeah, Nair.
Just
listening to Jerry, I was talking about him yesterday. So, Mr. Nair, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I think it was him. He signed over the land back to Mr. Nara. And he called the Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, we solved the problem. We signed the land back to Mr. Nara." And Prabhupada said, "You did what?" And he hung up. Now, when Prabhupada hung up on you, you know, you might as well jump off a bridge. If he chastised you, it wasn't so bad, but when he hung up on you, that was really... In any case, Prabhupada came to Bombay, and he met with Mr. Nair. And Mr. Nair brought his guru with him, because he was afraid Prabhupada was going to cast a spell on him. And at the same time, the devotees were there. So Prabhupada had a big feast, and they were all eating. And Prabhupada was eating enormous amounts of prasadam, encouraging Mr. Nair to also eat. And Prabhupada started, after they were eating all this prasadam, Prabhupada started going, and Mr. Nara said, "Oh, Swamiji, you must be tired." Prabhupada said, "That meant that Mr. Nara was also tired for eating so much." So Prabhupada said, "Yes." So they all took rest. Mr. Nara had his room, he was sleeping in. And Prabhupada was also, 10 minutes later, everyone was asleep. Prabhupada rang the bell. Tamakrishna Maharaj comes and says, "Wake up, Mr. Nara." So Mr. Nara comes, and Prabhupada bargains with him without his guru there. And they sign the contract again. And that was it. In other words, Prabhupada sometimes, he probably was quite transcendental. He would do whatever was necessary to spread Krishna consciousness. Sometimes he'd fast, sometimes he'd stay up late, sometimes he'd eat enormous amounts of prasadam, whatever was necessary to become, to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Now we ourselves are not necessarily so qualified. We don't invite someone to come over, do a contract and have a big feast and think, "I'll wake them up," because we may not wake up ourselves. I mean, I have a number of stories about what Prabhupada would do that we shouldn't do. So we should follow his instructions, not necessarily always his example. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.